Hiring used to be hard. There were multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the world's leading job boards, but they don't just stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's LOCKEDON. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining me now, it has been a while, but we're really glad to have him back here on Lockdown Cavs. It is Chris Barnwall, the Chris Pratt to my Chris Hemsworth, although I'm not as attractive as even Fat Thor. If you've seen Avengers Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. Chris, what's up, buddy?
Can I ask that you do no spoilers? I have yet to see it.
Oh,
but
man.
I think you are just as attractive as Chris Evans, at least.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, like, meta. I will say this. There's a lot of great things about Endgame. There's a lot of, like, meta commentary on the conversation around, like, the Chris Wars. Because there's, like, all those, like, very famous, very attractive dudes named Chris. And, like, three of them are in this movie.
As members of Team Chris, I think it's the best thing ever that there's so many Chrises in those movies.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
Like, we got Chris Reichert out here, we got Chris Manning, we got Chris Barnwall, now we got Chris Evans, Chris Pratt, like, Chris Hemsworth. We are rocking the full all-star lineup here.
Yeah, and my net worth is definitely very similar to all of those dudes. Very similar. Basketball, blogging about basketball and podcasting about basketball is, like, roughly pays the same as starring as Thor across, like, several movies. Starring on Parks and Rec. Like, that's actually not true, but I wish it was.
Absolutely it is true, because, like, I don't know where your red carpet invite was, but I definitely got mine. I was definitely chatting it up with all the stars last week.
Yeah, you were definitely there, just like, I mean, like, oh, hey, it's Team Chris. Like, there's actually, like, an Illuminati meeting. But in reality, Chris is here to talk with me about head coaching. And the Cavs obviously have a vacant head coach job right now. They are taking it slow. They're kind of going through a process of hiring. There are a couple other teams in that boat. As of right now, the only other teams looking for head coaches are the Phoenix Suns, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Memphis Grizzlies. One team that could have been there was the Oklahoma City Thunder, but it seems like they're going to keep Billy Donovan. As far as we know, someone like Scott Brooks isn't going to get fired. It doesn't seem like anyone else is really going to get the axe at this point in the offseason, at least as we stand right now. Maybe Brett Brown joins that list, depending on how things go in Philly-Toronto. But it's a four group of teams. So we're going to talk about how attractive we think the Cavs job is compared to these other ones. Chris, let's just get the Lakers thing out of the way first, because I feel as if that job is its own sort of lane, because the pool of candidates that we know about is sort of different. It comes with different expectations. I think the Cavs, Grizzlies, and Suns are all on similar wavelengths in terms of what they're trying to do the next couple of years. The Lakers obviously are trying to be good next year because they have LeBron James. That being, like, that's sort of like the job that has, like, the most marquee as well, because it is the Lakers. But I think it's just in a separate class to some of these other ones that we're talking about.
Right, I agree entirely, just because, like, in the Lakers' case, when you have LeBron, there's always the chance of you're going to be a contender, like, next season. You're always one trade away from it, just by the fact of having him allows you to make trades that other teams wouldn't really be able to make, because you can get players and agents into the deals and be willing. It's like when you saw when Cleveland was able to add him, all of a sudden they were able to put Kevin Love next to Kyrie Irving and LeBron, and they were able to go get veterans because everyone wanted to go play for them. But all of a sudden, they're a contender when they were just a mediocre playoff team, mediocre, barely a playoff team the year before. you can kind of make the case the Lakers are in a similar position to where one coaching hire, one trade, and all of a sudden they're in contenders. Well, when you're the Cavs right now, doesn't matter really who they hire. The roster just isn't quite there yet. They're not going to be contending anytime soon.
Yeah, and I think like what the Lakers are going to get in a coach is just like they're going to, if they get like Ty, for example, they're going to basically be like, hey, we want to maximize what we are right now and manage personalities. The Cavs are looking for something, and I think Phoenix is looking for this, and I think Memphis seems to be looking for this in firing JB Bickerstaff. They want someone who's going to cultivate that the identity of the team, like Kenny Atkinson has done in Brooklyn, like Lloyd Pierce is doing, in Atlanta. Like I think in a different way, but a similar way that Steve Clifford really did in Orlando this year, and kind of making that team a playoff team. Chris, what is your, when you look at these three jobs that are open with these three teams being in the top 80s of the lottery, which one to you, like, does your gut tell you is the most attractive job?
Cleveland, absolutely.
So,
which is kind of funny, but without hesitation, I would take Cleveland over these other two jobs just because, one, it's in the East, so you're more likely to make that kind of jump to go to the playoffs. Two, why in the world would any coach want to go work for Robert Sarver right now is beyond me. The Suns are the worst team to go coach for. No one should coach for the Suns. No one except veteran retreads like Scott Skiles, who really need a job right now, should ever go coach the Suns. No legitimate coach should ever go coach for this team of fake tough guys that love getting texts and love losing games for a star that thinks that scores 50 points and loses all the time. Like, never go coach the Suns, ever. The Suns are not even in this debate. It's between Memphis and Cleveland as far as attractive jobs go. The Suns are a bottom-tier job as far as attractiveness go. At least with the Lakers Middleton like ownership group, you have the fact of, oh, well, you get LeBron to, like, maybe win these games. Like, Phoenix has the same exact problems, and they suck.
Yeah, like the Lakers job has the upside of you could turn around the Lakers. You could be that guy, because that's something that, like, if you get them to, like, title contention next year, you're going to get, like, a lot of credit and be sort of, it's going to be a lot of scrutiny along the way, but it's certainly going to be, something where you're going to be kind of involved in that way. I'll play devil. I agree with you on Phoenix being tough because, I mean, if you just read the Kevin Arnovitz story about the Suns, like, you would not want to work there, right? And, like, I respect the hell out of James Jones. Like, I think he's obviously, like, a well-respected guy in the league. I don't quite understand what's going on with their organization. I think firing Kokoschkov to, like, try and hire Monty Williams is weird. I think the case for the Phoenix job is, you alluded to him, but it's like, if you love Devin Booker, and you can, I think, make an argument that among these three teams, Booker is the guy you might want to attach your vehicle to. If you're looking at one singular player right now, Booker might be that dude. And this is before the draft lottery, so that certainly matters here. But, like, if you're, like, a coach and you're like, hey, like, I think I can make Devin Booker live up to his vast potential, like, maybe that's the scenario where you think, hey, Phoenix can be something, and you have DeAndre Ayton, you have another lottery pick coming in this year, it's like it's a market that supposedly, like, is attractive to people, although that's never really been proven to be true. That's where I think you talk yourself into the Phoenix job. But the problem is, like, if you're David Vanderpool, if you're Nate Tibbetts, if you're someone like that who the Cavs are also interested in, that is a player development coach, that's what Phoenix did last year, and they gave Kokoschkov a year and didn't, like, give him really, like, any the right support system in trying to, like, maybe force the 8 seed by signing Trevor Ariza. Like, it's just, I think, The problem is just sort of in how they do things, even if Devin Booker is, like, maybe the most attractive guy in that group right now to coach.
Right. I do think, as far as, like, rosters you can mold, Phoenix is probably the best in that sense, where they have so many young players, they have all of this theoretical potential. I really like Michael Bridges. I am one of the people that's actually high on Ayton. I do think Devin Booker is a good player. They have a lot of young players. I don't think they have anyone that's actually, like, a player they theoretically use that's played more than 5 years except Ron Crawford, so that they have that going for them. So it's really young, you can mold it, but the issue is that front office group, not including James Jones, I think James Jones is at the mercy of Robert Sarver. They think they're supposed to be competing for the playoffs, which is just mind-bogglingly dumb. They're nowhere close to it, and yet they fire coaches and they fire people that seem to not follow into this lockstep idea of we should be in the playoffs or compete for the playoffs, when they have no actual shot at competing for it, and they constantly shoot themselves in the foot.
Okay, so let's look at Memphis. So what are the pros of the Memphis job? I think, obviously, you look at the roster, it's in the middle of a rebuild. They are going to owe a pick at some point. Mike Conley's still there. The Chandler Parsons contract only runs through next season, which will clear some cap space. You know, you assume that they're not going to be all that great next year. That, you know, the there is some iffy money sort of on the books. But they have Jaren Jackson Jr., who is freaking awesome. You know, I love his game. I think there's, like, all defensive potential there. They likely will be keeping their pick this year. We'll see how the lottery odds end up shaking out, but it is a top 8 protected pick. They're at number 8, so if a team does leap, like, they kind of do lose that pick, but they could add another lottery talent in this scenario. It's another owner that doesn't have the best reputation. There's a lot of shuffling going on there got new people being brought in with longtime guys like Chris Wallace and John Hollinger being pushed into advisory roles. What do you make of the Memphis situation, considering they had J.B. Bickerstaff? He seemed to be well-liked. It seemed like he or Chris Wallace did not think they were going to be moved on from, and then they were subsequently moved on from like a day later.
The Memphis one also has some of the similar issues as Phoenix, in a sense where it's like, oh, well, they could literally just fire you at any point if Robert Parra happens to have a weird thought in his head that day that Memphis should be in a different place than they are. But I do think the advantage of Memphis is, like you said, with Jaren Jackson Jr., and you really kind of get to be right there at the beginning of a rebuild. You get to help mold it and kind of take it in a direction for a group that's kind of decided, okay, we do have to enter kind of a bit of a restart here. They have a little bit of a head start on it with like pieces like Jonas Valanciunas, which they could either flip for assets or really kind of build around. They're probably going to get a decent haul for Mike Conley, who's a very good player. They probably won't get the best haul ever, but they'll get they should get an asset or a young draft pick or two. Maybe that's a pick on draft night where they use Mike Conley to move up to a higher position somehow with like honestly someone like Phoenix who really wants a point guard right now. They could really use that as an asset to kind of improve their standing. So I think that makes Memphis attractive. Just the issue is, like you said, the weirdness of, well, you could really be out the door at any random moment, or the front office could all of a sudden go through a different like regime change of some kind. They'll keep around certain guys, but then they'll remove others. Just, it feels like they never really have any idea what they want to do there, and that's kind of an issue of bad ownership. I think it's more attractive than Phoenix, but I don't think it's that much more attractive in comparison to, like we were just talking about, Cleveland, who, while Cleveland has their own issues, they at least seem to have an idea of what they want to be. They have veteran leadership there. That makes sense. Their young players aren't quite as attractive as the other two, but when you have this at least sense of stability and a sense of a plan, like they actually have something to do.
Okay, so let's talk about Jaren Jackson for a second, because I think he's...
I love Jaren Jackson.
So that's my question. Like, for me, I think if I was looking at these three teams, if you're looking at, like, let's stack up the best young player on all of these teams, I think he's number one on my list.
Young player, or
like I'm saying, like if you like, there's three young guys. If we're gonna say like the best young player, and I'm counting Devin Booker in this, for clearness. If I'm saying like I want to attach myself to one of these guys and try to build this with this guy for the next like 5 to 10 years, I think I might pick Jaren Jackson because if it's Colin Sexton in Cleveland right now, it's Booker in Phoenix, and it's Jaren Jackson Jr. in Memphis. I think there's a really strong case that Jackson's the guy because you could have a very modern center who could anchor a good defense and be like a modern offensive big. And it depends on what you will surround him with. But that dude like could be like super special, could be like we talk so much about how good Luka was this year and how good Trey was this year and everything. Like there's a non-zero chance he's the best player coming out of this class in a couple of years. Like that feels like a possibility in a way that like I don't think that is for Colin Sexton.
Okay, yeah, that I'm with you on the potential of Jaren Jackson. I thought you were saying like that Devin Booker wasn't currently better because Devin Booker is a current better player.
Oh, and he's ridiculous! Like scoring wise, like there's no comparison. The dude's got a crazy good offensive game. He's skilled in the post. He's just also an abhorrent defender.
Right. Although you do have to wonder. Is like, okay, you have this guy who doesn't play much defense. Is this a case of the fact that no one in Phoenix plays defense? That they're constantly losing, and it's hard to get this guy to want to play defense. It's like, okay, Devin Booker, we want you to go out there and try on defense today. And he looks around and goes, okay, why is this my fault in particular? Like, I understand it. So I think you do have to consider that in the debate between Booker or Jackson. But I think I agree with you in that the potential of what Jaren Jackson can be is just so much more than Booker, just because Jackson can really be one of those modern bigs that changes what you do. I don't want to say Joel Embiid type just because Joel Embiid is so special in his own right, but you kind of look at just how versatile Jackson is and you get really excited about his potential. There obviously are some flaws there, as there are in every young player, but when you consider that he's just already so skilled at such a young age, and then you have Booker, who's kind of a one-note player at the moment, who could maybe even get better, but we just don't know because Phoenix is such a train wreck. Like, you kind of want to attach yourself to Jackson.
Yeah. Jackson's just like a... He just feels like such like the most modern possible guy that you could build around. In a way, like Booker like could be, and like I think there's a good case about the Phoenix defensive argument that I think is there. I guess my question about Memphis is like that pick situation isn't great, and like at least with Phoenix you already have Ayton, who I like as well. I like Mikal Bridges. You know, if they could get a point guard in there, they could get like some other like useful pieces in there. And like, I don't hate TJ Warren either. I think like you can build something a little quicker there with Memphis's roster. You know, like let's say they trade Conley. We'll see what they could get for him. You know, Parsons is what he is. You're going to have Jonas Valanciunas next year, Kyle Anderson, CJ Miles. And then you have like maybe like Delon Wright and like Justin Holiday and like Joakim Noah played a bunch of minutes for this team this year. Tyler Zeller made a cameo for this team this year. Bruno Caboclo.
Oh my God. Yeah, he did.
they had Bruno Caboclo this year. I don't really like know. Like a lot of it depends on who they're going to draft. So if they get like Kobe White or like DeAndre Hunter, I'm like a little bit more in on this. If they lose the pick and it's like a very barren year, like that's a tough hang. Like that Memphis team could be like a tough hang, even if it means like they get their picks back quicker than they would have otherwise.
I think the appeal of Memphis versus Phoenix really depends on what you as a coach kind of want to do. If you want to be the kind of coach that takes over and molds your own rebuild from the start, then I think Memphis is the far more appealing job just because you get the chance to kind of be part of a takedown and rebuild process. Like, you know, this is going to be a team that's constantly bringing players in and out. So a Brett Brown type would be perfect for a team like Memphis that just wants to kind of start over and really build up from the ground up. Well, if you're someone that's like Phoenix, who, okay, you really just want to get things going, you need to start winning games, you need to start teaching players how to win games, that's where you go for maybe a Steve Clifford type, where they have a pedigree of winning. You know, they raise up the players, you know, they raise up players maybe above their head a little bit, they teach players how to play the right way. I think that's when you go for, that's the kind of coach Phoenix should be going after. Which is why I don't understand why they're going after Monty Williams, who is not that kind of coach. Monty Williams is definitely more of a personality manager, in my opinion, but Phoenix is going to Phoenix.
No, 100%. All right, so let's go to the Cavs. Let's look at the Cavs. This is, of course, a Cavs podcast, but we've sort of talked around them a little bit. I would say this. I think you said something that I think is worth getting into here and parsing. It's that the Cavs are in a position where they seem to be like trying to establish a culture. They seem to be trying to do the right thing, be a little bit patient. I think I agree in that they are saying that that is what they are doing. So you have Kobe Altman's really kind of towing that line. Larry Drew preached that a lot this season before he let go. Like everything they're putting out there seems to be like, we're going to be competent now. We have a plan. We're not going to try to rush this. There isn't going to be like an Earl Clark or signing or like a Luol Deng trade or something like that. In an effort to,
yeah, man,
what a time. College blogging for me was just like, I'd be in class, get out, Cavs did X thing crazy. I was like, okay, here we go again.
we're doing this today, huh?
Yeah, I remember being on like, I remember like being in psych class when like they fired Chris Grant. I was like, oh, this makes sense. This checks out.
This is full. Was Chris Grant the one who, Chris Grant's the one who signed Andrew Bynum, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God! What? That was one of the funniest. He was literally shooting shots at half court until he got benched in practice. How do you get benched in practice?
It's just Andrew Bynum. It's all incredible. But like, they seem to like trying to be moving past that, and I think they deserve credit for that. I need to see them actually do it.
Oh, absolutely.
So like
they are one Dan Gilbert decision away from being right back to old Caps.
So that's the thing. It's like we're like not a year removed from like them, Dan trying to like hire Chauncey Billups at all costs and like letting David Griffin walk over like not being able to see some level of control. we are not that far like removed. And like, yes, like it was shot down very quickly, but like the source, like we shouldn't, maybe I should not have like reacted how I did, but like I like half believe for a second that I was like, oh, like Rick Pitino to the Cavs, like this seems like a Dan Gilbert thing to do. That gets me like a little bit queasy, but you look at the rest of the names that they're being linked to: David Vanderpool, Nate Tibbetts, Jordy Fernandez. Like those are the type of guys that like make a lot of sense. I guess like that, like if you believe that like this is a team that is actually trying to build its own culture, that has an owner that's willing to spend, and they're not going to like do crazy shit, that's where I think this job could be really appealing. Because I think, as we've sort of outlined, the young talent isn't quite there. The way it is in Phoenix, and it could be in Memphis if Jaren Jackson Jr. and like another lottery pick really hit.
I think what's really appealing about what they're doing right now is you look at the way they've kind of operated early on. They've made the right moves where they did things like they didn't immediately get rid of Kevin Love just because they were entering a rebuild. With, I understood the criticisms against that. It made sense. It would have been perfectly an okay decision to let Kevin Love go or to get rid of Kevin Love for assets. That would have made sense. But when you look at how much more competent they were, how much he helped Colin Sexton really just grow as a player when he came back from his injury last year, keeping him was so beneficial to just raising up their young players and making them better. You look at them taking flyers on guys like Marcus Chris. You look at them keeping up veterans, at least for last year, like Channing Frye, who will just kind of be a good locker room presence. And you look at them just taking flyers on players that make sense to take flyers on. And you just really appreciate that they do appear as a loose beat right now, making the right decisions as far as a rebuild standpoint. I will say, taking that next step of, okay, we're going from just being the good, happy-go-lucky team that like keeps guys happy and does the right thing to winning actual basketball games is a much harder part. But I do like the early stages more than, as we've discussed multiple times now, someone like Phoenix early stages of time.
Okay, hypothetical here. If you were the Cavs coach coming in and you were like going to be sort of consulted on two possible paths, would it make the job more appealing where they would flip Kevin Love for the best the package of picks and young players that they could get, or would it be more attractive for you to keep him regardless of who they take in June?
Regardless of who they take?
Let's say like non-Zion, like in the non-Zion
right,
category.
I was going to say Zion changes this a lot. I think at the moment where they are, if Kevin Love is okay staying around for another year, that like this depends entirely. If Kevin Love at any point says, no, trade me, get rid of him immediately. That is no longer helpful to your team's growth. Then you have a disgruntled player. But if he's okay playing on a team that's not going to be that good and helping these young players grow, absolutely keep him. I do not know how he can be a negative in any way when you look at how they played last year, just considering like how much they grew just having someone competent on the floor with them.
I mean, if you look at the numbers, like they were a borderline-ish top 10 offense with him on the floor last year. They just function more competently if you look at the tape with him on the floor. Like there's just no denying that. And like I don't really buy that the best way to rebuild in like Philly, people can like point at Philly, but like Embiid's transcendent and everything. I don't like buy that like removing all the adults from the room is like good for a rebuild. So if like you can keep Tristan,
it failed in Orlando for years.
Right. So like I'm saying, if you can keep Kevin Love, if you can keep Larry Nance Jr., if you can like sign the right veterans who like surround Jetty and Colin Sexton and whomever they're taking coming up here soon, I think that's a good way to build. And Kevin's good. And I think like that's just something we like have to remember, that Kevin Love, although there are legit injury concerns, that's a lot of money to be paying Kevin Love. He's a really, really good basketball player. There's just like no, I think, way around that.
I think just for the growth, if they really do believe in Colin Sexton, just having him there alone helps Sexton, just because you look at the way Sexton was at the beginning of the year. He just kind of drove into the defenses without purpose. He didn't really seem to have a clear idea of what he was doing. His idea just as basketball is, I'm going to take the ball and go up the rim against four people, and I don't care what's going to happen next. When you had Love there to just be like, okay, how about when you do that, I draw two defenders away because I'm such a good shooter, and then kind of gave Sexton some idea of, oh, there's not as many defenders here. I can't end up moving, and then I'm running an offense. Like that alone, if they really do believe in Sexton, I think you just keep Kevin Love for that reason alone of helping him understand how offense works.
Okay, so we don't need to get into Dan Gilbert thing. So I just want to say, like, I do, like, I think that should be something people do consider if they're taking this job. Like, I think all the thing that links all of these things together is, like, unstable, potentially unstable ownership. Although Dan has been willing to spend in a way that I think other owners wouldn't, and I think he deserves credit for that. How would the draft lottery to you, Chris, impact, like, obviously I think Zion is his own thing in a way that I think a lot of people would be super excited to coach that guy. But how much do you think the actual lottery placement could affect these things? Like, we don't really know if any of these teams are going to hire a coach in the next 2 weeks. So, like, do you think, like, these jobs could become more or less attractive based on where they're picking, even if just the Cavs are at 2 and the Suns are at 3, do you think that could make these jobs more attractive than they might be if we, based on what anything else we've kind of discussed?
I don't think it'll help that much just because coaches hate rookies. So I don't think a coach looking at the lottery positioning and going, oh, well, the Cavs have a higher pick this year, so they're definitely going to have a better prospect for me to coach up. I don't really think that's going to help them that much this year, kind of be someone. I don't think a coach is going to look at that and go, oh, okay, that makes me really want to go coach that team over this team. I think they're going to look at so many different factors that that's going to be – I could see it maybe being a tiebreaker. If you were really unsure if you wanted to coach Cleveland or Phoenix, and those were your top two teams, and every situation was just a tie to you, and then you looked and went, okay, well, the Cavs are getting Zion and the Suns are getting R.J. Barrett. I want to coach Zion. I could see that being the tiebreaker. But I don't think any of these coaches are going to look, even at a transcendent player like Zion Williams, like Zion, I don't think any coach is going to look at that and go, all right, I want to coach this team because of young players, just because I've seen coaches, they don't like rookies. They don't even like transcendent rookies. They just don't.
I mean, I think that's right. I think Zion will be an interesting test case for that. I wonder, like, if that impacts, if we find out, you know, after the fact, like, if there's information put out there, or the team say anything that would indicate that, like, they approach this differently because they get Zion. I wonder if these teams are waiting to some degree. Like, the playoffs obviously are slowing this down because they're trying to get interviews with guys like David Vanderpool and Tibbetts and Jordy Fernandez and stuff who, like, are coaching right now. You know, like, with the Cavs coaching search, there's, like, two of their candidates are in Jamal Mosley and Alex Jensen are sort of, and Juwan Howard as well, are guys that aren't on coaching with playoff teams, but, like, Vanderpool and Tibbetts are widely considered to be some of the top assistants out there, and they're currently busy because they have a series that starts, you know, that hasn't even started yet based on when we're recording this. I find personally evaluating assistant coaches in the NBA without being, like, in these markets and, like, talking to, like, these specific teams all the time to be very difficult. Are there coaches out there that at least, like, based on what you know or anything that have interest you, or is there an archetype of coach that you think would make sense for the Cavs in particular?
I think the coach that the Cavs should be looking for is someone that is willing to show more patience than a lot of other coaches will, just because, like we stated earlier, as far as from a talent standpoint kind of goes, Cleveland might be at the bottom as far as young players with potential and really just as a roster as a whole, because Memphis is a better roster, Phoenix is better young players, and Cleveland, well, I'm higher on Colin Sexton than other people. I don't think he's going to be someone that you really write home about right now early on in his career. So because of that, you have these players that you really need someone to be patient with, and I think Cleveland just going to need someone that's going to be like, okay, yes, Colin Sexton just drove into the entire defense on a fast break and threw up a bad layup. I'm not going to bench him immediately. I feel it, but I'm not going to. Like, that's the coach that they should really be going for. Besides that qualification, young coaches and young rosters are such a random kind of situation where it sometimes pans out, sometimes doesn't. Sometimes you make the perfectly correct hire, and it goes completely and totally wrong for you, and there was just nothing you could do about it. They ended up not being a good coach. That's one of those risks you kind of take. So you just kind of got to look at their personality, personally.
Yeah, that's why, like, and I think for the Cavs, like, thinking about that, they're never going to be a free agency destination, that, like, they really need to establish a culture that isn't going to be, like, relying on, like, them drafting, like, the next LeBron James or Kyrie Irving or something like that, right? Like, they need to develop things. Like, I think, like, that's why, like, in theory, Vanderpool just becomes a very attractive candidate to me, because you look at what he's done in Portland. He's really helped the guys keep growing. They've done a really good job of developing not just Dame and CJ, but like Nurkic took a big leap there. You know, Zach Collins has shown some things. Like they've
Portland's one of those places where you send like the worst player possible, and they also turn it in.
Like I don't think Rodney Hood's been like good for them, but like he's like much better there and more comfortable and like organized than he ever did with the Cavs. And I think environment has something to do with it, especially for a guy like Rodney that has kind of talked about like needing the right environment to really succeed.
They made Steph Curry and Zubaz Napier both have NBA careers.
Yeah, right. Like this, and Vanderpool is like from everything we know, like a big part of that. And I think like getting that guy, and like that's why, like even though I can't speak to like what kind of coach Juwan Howard is, the Heat have done a lot of things wrong in post LeBron. Like their cap sheet's a mess. But like if there's one thing that like if you could steal from them and put it in your organization, it's like their ability to get a dude like Deion Waiters in like ridiculous shape and like have him be ready to play at least, because like their culture and like the work they're willing to put it on your body and getting guys in that kind of shape just does pay off in a way. And it's hard to do. They're like very much one of the few teams known for that. But if you could find a way to replicate something like that, or what Portland's doing, or, you know, like I think Denver's done a really good job in under Mike Malone in getting the most out of some guys. Like that's the kind of thing I think you need to replicate based on just market size. Like they will never be the Lakers where it's like you can like sign theoretically sign three guys and make everything okay again. The Cavs are just never going to be that team. So you need that culture. And I think that's why this coaching hire is so important. I think it's the same for all of these teams, but I think for the Cavs in particular, based on some of the things we're talking about, I think it's maybe more important than for these other spots.
Right, and I will say that whole thing with making Deion Waiters get into perfect shape, you need a team culture that players actually respect. The reason Deion Waiters can go to Miami and get in perfect shape like that is because Miami has a rule of you have to be at a certain body fat percentage to even play here, or you get fined or possibly even cut. And the only time players will actually really, really buy into that thing is if they respect everything around them. The Heat have respect of players, and they have respect of the other teams around them. They just have respect. Cleveland does not currently have that respect, and they really need to build towards it. So that's a really good idea in like concept of like, I'm pretty sure Cleveland goes into a meeting and says, let's be Miami. But if they go into work tomorrow and go, okay, everyone, you have to be at this body fat percentage, every single player is going to go, yeah, okay. And J.R. Smith is going to continue to not show up, and Jordan Clarkson is going to go eat a five-course dinner, because they'll just do it to be like, F you, we don't care what you have to say about our bodies, because they don't have that same level of respect that maybe someone like Miami does. So you're correct, but they need to really build that respect level up first, which I think they can do. But as you're right, they need to, as you've been saying, they need to establish the culture first.
It involves hiring the right coach. It involves Kobe Altman or whomever the executive is not being let go after their first contract, because Dan Gilbert has famously never had an executive around that long. I don't think that helps at all. It doesn't help, I think, working with agents and whatnot. All right, Chris, we're going to wrap it up on a trivia question here.
Oh, no.
This is going to... So, here it is. Who is the last Cavs head coach that coached more than three full seasons in a row? I'm going to remove Ty Lue from that, because he came in, obviously, in the middle of the 2016 season and then coached two full seasons and was let go after six games this past season. So, who was the last coach who started a season and finished at least more than three, so four-plus seasons in a row before they were let go? Who is that coach?
Four plus seasons in a row. I'm trying to remember how long Mike Brown was the coach the first time. Was it Mike Brown?
It was Mike Brown. So Mike Brown comes in 2005-2006. He is let go after the 2009-2010 season, of course. And then since then, it was 3 years of Byron Scott, a year of Mike Brown part two, A year and a half exactly of David Blatt, and then Tyronn Lue, and then Larry Drew. Before Mike Brown, before Mike Brown, if you want to go back before that, you had a couple years of Paul Silas. You had John Lucas. You had Randy Whitman, and before that, you had Mike Fratello and Lenny Wilkins, who were both coached for multiple years. But aside from Mike Brown in the post Mike Fratello era, so basically starting with the 1999-2000 season, Randy Whitman's first year, think Mike Brown is the only coach to come in and coach for the team for 4 years or more consecutively from the start of the season to an end of the season.
That lack of stability kind of points right there why they've had problems establishing culture.
Yeah, and like, you know, I can't even really tell you like who was the last, you know, good coach hire. I think Ty is sort of like the answer because they won a title with him and he ultimately did things that really worked. But like, it's really hard to look like, and you could look at Mike Brown's success because they did win a bunch with him, even if it didn't, you know, result in a title or anything like that. But like, they don't have a good track record. And I think this coaching hire, if they do something different than what they've done, I think it's going to be really interesting. And I personally just, this to me, I don't know how, aside from the draft and maybe more than the draft, this to me is like the most fascinating thing the Cavs will do this summer, because I just want to see if they stick to everything they're putting out, if they live up to their talk of we're going to be a culture organization first and foremost, because that will show in who they hire as their head coach.
What are your thoughts on Ty Lue to the Lakers?
I think they could do worse than Ty. Like, I would rather have Ty than Monty.
They absolutely can do worse. But, so, like, I really want to be adamant that I do not think Ty Lue is a bad coach. I think the people who say he's straight up a bad coach are wrong. I think he is definitely a flawed coach. And I don't think he's the right coach to fix the Lakers' flaws beyond making LeBron happy, which maybe that's the only flaw they need to fix. But I don't know. I look at all the issues the Lakers had last year, and I'm like, I don't see how Ty fixes them.
So, like, if I look at the guys they've been linked to, and I think about LeBron, and I think about what sort of, like, brings the best out of LeBron at this point in his basketball life, Ty, to me, is just, like, the obvious candidate there. Like, among the guys they've actually been linked to. Is it the most inspired choice? No. You know, does Ty have his limitations? I think 100% he does. But I also think if you're looking at someone who, like, is not going to be, like, phased by all that and, like, is going to be able to deal with the LeBron stuff and, like, is going to be able to reach LeBron in meaningful ways and, like, manage a chaotic situation, I do think Ty is really good at that, and I think he's skilled at that. So, like, I would – that and, like, that alone makes me think, like, he might just make sense because, like, you need someone who can weather that storm in a way that it's going to happen. Because if you don't have that guy – and, like, LeBron doesn't trust that guy, we sort of know how that's going to play out. And I don't think, like, there's any time they can waste in, like, betting on, like, this isn't, like, the Pat Riley being able to, like, stick with Eric Spoelstra. It's a little bit later in LeBron's basketball life where, like, you need to make the most of what you have in him now. And I think there's a really good argument that ties that guy if you just don't really feel like there's another great option out there for you for, like, and I just don't know, like, how LeBron would react to, like, them hiring, like, David Vanderpool or, like, an ex top assistant in the league. That to me would just be, like, something that I just don't really know how that plays out.
Okay, that's fair. And I will say, of the coaches they've listed, Ty Lue is probably the best guy to handle the drama that comes with coaching in Los Angeles, LeBron James and the Lakers. Like, he can handle that drama, no sweat, and just deal with it. Like, the guy's been in so many situations, he can handle it all, no issue. I think my concerns just come with the fact that when we look at the Lakers' biggest problems last year, it was they didn't play defense, and they had an issue playing really bad veterans over their probably more talented young players. Their rotations were not always the most crisp. We kind of look at some of Tyronn Lue's regular season problems, at least, and in the playoffs, he became a really more kind of when you he was able to limit his rotations to what he just needed to do best and actually kind of scheme in a more matchup based scenario, Ty Lue became a phenomenal coach in the playoffs. But when you look at the regular season issues, I just go, oh, I really hope they get the stars needed to actually win games next year, because they didn't have them this year, and I don't think he'll be able to get them to the playoffs next year if he doesn't get them.
Yeah, things could go bad there with Ty. Like, I don't really doubt that one bit that things could not be the best for my guy Ty Lue if things kind of get bad there. But it's going to be a fascinating hire. Chris, when you look at this offseason, what are just real quick here? Do you have, like, a guy besides Zion that you think would be interesting on the Cavs? Is there anyone that stands out to you as, like, a prospect or very early in this process before we even know the draft order? They're like, I think that guy makes sense with what the Cavs are doing.
I think what the guy is probably the best that they can really get. Honestly, they are going after the right top assistants, which is probably the best situation. if you wanted a different name that I think they might want to at least consider, they won't ever actually do this. I think Frank Vogel is a really good coach. He got a really bad rap in Orlando. I think he was a good coach in Indiana. I think if Cleveland wants to be that team that kind of makes that kind of goes and makes a jump unexpectedly, Vogel's the guy you go with. I think he's a very talented coach. I think he is a great defensive coach, and I think he can bring out a lot of good things in that Cleveland team. He is very patient. He did have issues with holding certain guys accountable, and that was like a bit of a problem of his throughout his entire career. But if you were looking for like a retread type guy, that's a name I'd consider. But considering they're going after the top assistants and that seems to be their mindset, I think what they got going is pretty well.
Yeah, I think if they were like slightly more advanced, I think he would make a lot of sense. But I just don't think they're really there right now in terms of...
Right, that's just the only retread name I can think of, like, because most retreads out there are bad.
No, yeah, 100%. Like, I was just laughing for like the Mike Brown part three. Like, he coached with the Warriors. Like, he's ready for this.
Oh my God. I would be so happy.
Like, I would. I don't even know what I would do. I would be very like perplexed. It would be really interesting.
Mike Brown's just out here collecting checks. He's the king.
I mean, look, like you could literally like spin it as like this is like the best coach you've had in the modern millennium, and he's been learning from the Warrior, so like he's our guy. And I'd be like, okay, heat check time. let's just run the least imaginable offensive that you can find. You can fire him again. You can just pay him for another 5 years. Like. I get it.
I really like this possibility of there's this alternate – actually, this isn't even alternate universe. It's the current universe where Mike Brown just has really, really bad blackmail on Dan Gilbert, and every time he needs a paycheck, he just calls Dan and says, hey, hire me. You can fire me after a year. I'll collect the contract still. We'll have an excuse for you to pay me money legally, and I won't release these pictures of you at that party.
Yeah, I will just, like, if I had the Infinity Gauntlet, I wouldn't, like, snap it to, like, save resources. I would just snap it so, like, Mike Brown can no longer coach the Cavs. I would use, like, the infinite power of the Infinity Gauntlet and just snap my fingers.
It's a lifetime contract to coach the Cavs.
Yeah, let's go. Let's just give him the John Calipari, like, Kentucky, like, blood money contract, and we'll call it a day.
I love it.
That's good. Chris, remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter and find your writing.
You can find me on Twitter at Chris Barnwall, CHRISBARNEWALL. I tweet mainly bad takes about video games and basketball. If you want to see my writing, go to uprocks.com or Dime. That is where you can find most of my writing. If you want to see what I've been writing on and working on most lately, though, buy NBA Live 20 when it comes out. I am currently writing script dialogue for that game, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, buy that game. Check out Chris's writing. And we're going to be back again later this week. Jordan Zerm will be joining me to talk about Kevin Love. And then Friday, Trevor McNight and I are doing our first mock draft where we did a tankathon sim. The Cavs ended up with the 4th overall pick, and an interesting team jumped up to number 2. So we'll have our first big mock draft. You'll be able to read that as well at Fear the Sword. But for myself, for Chris, this has been Locked On Cavaliers for Tuesday, April 30th. Team Chris signing off. Talk to you again later this week.